Tale of a Teacup, A Tale of Old Seamus by Jerry McCulloch. Whenever I can, I like to spend a week in Ardnakill, the small Donegal village where I grew up many years ago. And when I'm there, I take the opportunity to call in on old Seamus O'Hare. Seamus taught me everything I know about fishing, poaching and the countryside. He taught me to recognise a lark's call and to tell a wagtail from a chaffinch. He was a never-ending source of stories about the people of the village and the townland, although I have reason to believe he kept most of his information back from my young years. Now that I am no longer an innocent child, he is more forthcoming. I can usually find Seamus at the bar of the local pub, the Golden Pheasant, sitting peacefully with a pint in one hand and his disreputable old pipe in the other, and always ready for what he calls a bit of a crack. He greets me with a smile and an invitation to join him, and before many minutes have passed, he will be fairly launched into one of his stories. I listen with all the delight of my childhood days, but with rather more understanding of my fellow beings to add to the enjoyment. It was one stormy evening, late last November, that Seamus told me the story of Maggie Neeson and a cracked teacup. Maggie lived in the last cottage out towards Millerstown, just where the houses start to straggle out and come to an end, said Seamus, puffing gently on his old pipe. She was a quiet sort of a girl, and everyone was surprised when Big Peter Malone started courting her. And after a reasonable space of time, it would have been about 5 years, got to the stage of proposing. Maggie took him. I suppose she liked him all right, but there was this as well, fellas don't grow on trees, and Maggie wasn't getting any younger. Sure, she had to take her chance when she could, and Peter wasn't a bad sort of critter, though a bit tight with the money. Well, that was the start of the trouble. While he was still courting Maggie, Peter knew he had to spend a bit. Nothing too extravagant, you understand. A bar of chocolate once a month, and sometimes a few flowers that he could pick for free along the edge of the road. He even took her into Millerstown a couple of times to the pictures, and for a cup of tea after. But once she'd said yes, I reckon Peter felt he didn't need to bother any more. As he said to Maggie, "Sure, we'll need every penny to pay for the week in Bundoran for the honeymoon. Where would I be getting spare cash for gallivanting or for buying presents these days?" Maggie didn't like it. She had her heart set on a tea set she'd seen in the big china shop in Millerstown, and she was for buying it as a wedding present to herself, as she put it. "We'll have all the neighbours calling in to see us and expecting a cup of tea and a nice china set, Peter," she told him. "It's not very dear considering." But Peter went on saying no, until the day Maggie went into Millerstown herself on the bus and bought the set and carried it home with her. Now, it was her own money Maggie used. She kept hens and had a brave good turnover from the eggs, as well as selling the extra fowls to Liam McKenna the butcher. So she felt she had a right to spend her own money if she wanted to. But Peter didn't see it like that. As far as he was concerned, Maggie was promised to him, and her money would be his money before long. So he didn't want to see her spending it, instead of keeping it for him. I just happened to be lying out in the long grass on the bank of the stream behind Maggie's cottage, watching for a chance to tickle an old trout I'd had my eye on for days. And I couldn't help but hear the shouts of Peter when Maggie showed him the tea set. "Wasting good money," he was roaring. "Take it back, woman, and get your money back while you still can. That's my last word on the subject." "I will not," Maggie shouted back at him. "I've wanted a good china set all my life, and if I can't buy one when I'm getting married, sure, when can I ever?" "You're an old skinflint, Peter Malone, and it's not even your money." Peter let out a roar, and he must have grabbed one of the cups out of Maggie's hand, for she called out, "Peter, be careful, will you?" "Ah, sure, why should I be careful with it?" Peter roared. "It's not my money that bought it, you tell me. And with that, he must have hurled the cup across the room, for Maggie let out a wail to Peter to let the cup alone, and I heard her rushing across the room after it. By then, things had got a bit confused. Now, so far, I haven't mentioned young Chuck Doherty, as he called himself. He was a son of my old friend Sean Doherty, who emigrated to the US of A when he was only a lad. Young Chuck had come back to the village on a sort of a holiday, a vacation, he called it, just about the time that Peter and Maggie got engaged. I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but it's a thing I've often thought, that when something seems valuable to one person, it starts a good many other people off thinking the same. Before Peter started courting Maggie, no one else ever took a blind bit of notice of her. But no sooner did the fellas round about see that Peter wanted her, than a number of them began to think there might be more in Maggie than they realised. And of all of them, it was young Chuck Doherty that thought the most of her. Just the evening before Maggie bought the tea set, Chuck was in this very bar sitting with me, and after the first pint or two, he began to talk more confidentially, as people do. "I love that girl, Seamus," he said to me, very earnest. "I used to dream, when I was home in the States, of a beautiful young Irish Colleen. And when I came back here, the first girl I saw was Maggie, and she was just my dream come true. What she sees in that big light Malone, I'll never know. I just wish I had a chance to show her how much I love her." He laughed in a shamefaced sort of way. "I used to dream, when I thought about my Irish Colleen, that I would win her heart by rescuing her from a dragon or something. If I could just rescue her from that Peter Malone guy, I guess that would be enough." "Well, you never know, Chuck lad," I told him. "Stick around and maybe you'll get a chance to do just that." Lying in the grass behind Maggie's cottage, it came to me that maybe this was Chuck's chance. I got myself away from there without them hearing a thing. Though by then the row was bad enough that they might not have heard if the house had fallen down. Chuck was mooning around throwing bits of stick into the lake. It only took me a few minutes to find him. "If you want to rescue an Irish Colleen," I told him, "now is your chance." I say this for him, he didn't need telling twice. He was away up the road to the cottage in no time at all. I followed him a bit more slowly. I didn't want to miss anything, you understand, but I didn't fancy getting into a fight either. At my time of life, you leave all that to the young ones. I got to the cottage door just in time to see what happened. Peter Malone, with his arms up protecting his head, was running down the path for his life, letting out roar after roar. "Don't now, Maggie, don't!" After him came Maggie, the big broom in her hands, and she was beating Peter round the lugs with it as hard as she could go. She got two or three good blows in while I was watching, and I reckon they weren't the first. "Break my good china cup, would you?" she was shouting at him. "A crack of my lung there is in it, Peter Malone. Just you wait till I get at you." But Peter, showing more sense than I would have credited him with, had no notion of waiting. With a roar, he was off down the road, leaving Maggie flushed and victorious, waving the broom after him. As she turned round to set the broom down, she saw Chuck standing there with his mouth open. "Well, what are you looking at?" she snapped. "Are you coming in or aren't you?" Chuck followed her meekly into the cottage. How they worked it out between them, I can't tell you, for they closed the door tight. All I can tell you is that they weren't shouting. I still get a postcard from them both occasionally, from the States, for she married him and moved out there within a very short time. But whether Chuck thinks he ended up with the Irish Colleen or with the dragon, I've never dared to ask.
You've been listening to the Jerry McCulloch Podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast via iTunes. Just go to the iTunes Music Store and search for Jerry McCulloch. Or you can subscribe or play individual stories at jerrymcculloch.podomatic.com. For more information on Jerry and her books, poems, stories and articles, go to her website at jerrymcculloch.com.